Welcome to the Washington Update podcast from the National Association of Health Underwriters. NAHU secured another victory this week after President Trump signed into law the continuing resolution to fund the federal government that also included a delay of the Cadillac tax, suspension of the health insurance tax, delay of the medical device tax, and 6 years of renewed funding for the Children's Health Insurance Program. On this week's installment, Marcy Buckner and Chris Hartman discuss the steps NAHU has taken since the last delays were enacted in 2015, and what we are planning to do to get the ACA taxes permanently repealed. NAHU has been meeting with members of Congress for more than 2 years since the last delays were signed into law to get permanent repeal of the Cadillac and health insurance taxes, or in the meantime, for delays. What were some of the steps NAHU took to help make this happen?
So thank you and welcome everyone. We are very excited this week. We had huge successes on the 2 year delay of the Cadillac tax, the delay of the HIT tax for 2019, and a 6 year extension of the Children's Health Insurance Program. So we are really revved up and feel that this is huge progress. And we're very excited that Congress is listening to the effects of these taxes on employers and individuals, and both employers large and small. So we've been working and plugging away on the Cadillac tax and health insurance tax really since the ACA was created, and talking to them about how what a negative effect this has on employers, and particularly how the Cadillac tax really doesn't bend the cost curve, doesn't stop people from getting Cadillac plans, really hits plans that are more of a Ford focus than a Cadillac tax. And so we've been meeting with them. You guys have done what we have as Operation Shout to email and call their members of Congress about it. At CAP conference, people have visited with their individual offices. And I also think we've had a lot of very real world, detailed, data-full documents talking about what are the effects on healthcare plans as we got closer to the Cadillac tax deadline on things like deductibles, on spousal benefits. And it's been a big success for NAHU, and I think we can keep the momentum going.
Yes, I think one of the biggest things that NAHU has done on an advocacy level for this, along with our coalition partners and others, was to be able to provide that data that Chris mentioned on exactly how employers are starting to approach this when we're getting into these deadlines. Over the past several years, first when we were approaching the 2018 deadline, and then again over the past couple of years approaching the 2020 deadline, we've had some of you put together documents showing exactly what your clients are looking at as far as what they're offering their employees and how those packages could change over the years leading up to implementation of a Cadillac tax and how it would affect those employees. And those are really powerful documents to be able to show members of Congress and also folks over at Treasury who are charged with putting into place the rules on how to implement the Cadillac tax. Obviously, those documents were redacted to protect personal and health information, but because they were actual records from employers, I think we did a lot to move the needle on this just with being able to provide real-world data and to put some faces on the Cadillac tax and how this would affect them. And then recently, just within the past couple of weeks, when we were seeing the possibility of the Cadillac tax being delayed through the continuing resolution and the HIT tax being delayed for 2019 through this legislative vehicle, we did submit a letter of support asking Congress for their support for this bill to get this through, not only to continue funding the government and the 6 years for CHIP, but also for these delays for the Cadillac tax and HIT tax.
Without further action, the Cadillac tax is now set to take effect in 2022 instead of 2020, and the health insurance tax is suspended for 2019. What should NAHU members be telling their clients about these delays?
Well, first, I want to just emphasize what we have already been saying here when we're talking about this legislative victory as an additional delay of the Cadillac tax. So I have been out and about, as many of you know, I often am visiting with different members and chapters across the country. And I did hear someone say the R word in relation to the Cadillac tax, that it was repealed. It has not been repealed. And I want to make sure we are very clear about that and very clear when you're talking to your clients and others. This is an additional 2 year delay, moving it to 2022 instead of effective date of 2020. So I know, as we've mentioned before, many of you have already started those conversations with your clients about how they could structure their plans for 2020. Now we're just moving that out to 2022. So it is still something that they should be thinking about and in the back of their minds.
Yeah, on both of these taxes, we would like to see them repealed, but that definitely hasn't happened yet. We've made good progress on seeing them delayed. I'd hope to like to see both of these taxes repealed in the long run. But for now, you have to do planning around having this tax come into place for 2022 and everything that takes place with that. And even at looking at what sort of plans will be swallowed up in 2022 by that Cadillac tax, I think needs to be part of any smart planning. While everybody at NHU will be working really hard to see this tax repealed, there's always a possibility that the politics, the cost around this, and things can get difficult, and the tax really does come into existence in 2022. So you can't let your clients get caught off guard by it.
And we have had some questions about whether, because this wasn't a continuing resolution, if Congress could come back and take action to have the implementation date moved closer up so that they could move it from 2022 closer in time back to 2020 or something like that. Technically, that's something that's possible, but it's something that is very unlikely. You've seen how long it's taken us to get these 2-year delays here and there. And so we think it's very unlikely for Congress to come back and try to implement it at an earlier date. There's just not the appetite for that. As we've seen in the past congressional session, there was a vote on repealing the Cadillac tax in the Senate that passed, 90-10. So there's a lot of support for further delays and repeal. So to answer that question that we've gotten a lot over the past week, we don't foresee Congress doing anything to try to change this effective date to make it any earlier. So what we would see going forward with would either be continued delays or hopefully a repeal. And then, of course, we will continue to work with the agencies, with the Department of Treasury. Again, as I mentioned earlier, they're charged with putting together the rules to implement how this would be put upon our employers. And so we'll continue to work with them to make sure that if we do get to 2022 and this is going to be put into place, that we have rules far in advance of that with safeguards to help on some of those areas like gender, geography, and age, which we know affect some of you all to trigger the Cadillac tax when perhaps maybe the plans that you're offering wouldn't have, but despite those factors.
Major legislative packages have increasingly been the vehicle for other legislation to be attached to and passed. What other opportunities is NAHU eyeing for passage of other legislation, such as employer reporting reform or changing the ACA's 30-hour work week?
So there are other large vehicles that are coming up in Congress. This past vehicle was just a continuing resolution, actually only a 3-week continuing resolution. Really short. So we're going to be back in less than 3 weeks at this point to pass another continuing resolution, or possibly a complete omnibus appropriations bill, meaning the actual paying for the year that we're already in. We're actually already into this year that we're talking about, but the government's just being funded in short-term increments. I think we might see another couple of short-term increments, but this can't go on forever. You can't have an entire calendar year that you're doing in few-week increments. For example, many agencies need to do large contracts, put out requests for grants, all those sorts of things. No grant, no agency, no program is actually being run in a couple of weeks increments. So if you're really going to do anything large, particularly when you're looking at large things and the Defense Department is part of that, you need it for a full year. So at some point, we will be up to an omnibus appropriations bill. I actually think that is a really, really good point in time for looking at things related to the employer reporting system. Also looking at things for market stability. We've had further conversations this week about truly getting some market stabilizations in there, such as we talked about with Alexander Murray and the cost sharing reduction. But also we've had a lot of good progress in the last week or two on reinsurance and getting a reinsurance program as part of that. So I think those pieces on the employer system and market stabilization have a good shot at being part of a larger omnibus appropriations bill for the year.
Right. I agree. The omnibus bill is going to be the next big piece of legislation for us to attach things onto. And I think when we look at what we're hearing from what is happening currently in the employer-sponsored field, I do agree that we may see something on employer reporting. I know many of you are working with your clients that are getting those 226J letters about the penalties, the A and B penalties that your employers may be facing. And this has caused a lot of noise. I know it's not front page news, or is it's not what you're seeing when you turn on Fox or MSNBC, but it's definitely caused a buzz here. And I think we'll put a lot more pressure on any action for employer reporting and some other pieces that we could see wrapped into the omnibus.
I also think that Medicare has possibilities of being its own package moving forward. So not needing to look at something larger going on, but I do think some of the issues around value-based design and the Medicare program, how we notify people that they're eligible for Medicare, all of those have a good shot of moving along this year as their own package. And Medicare has been much more of a bipartisan activity than talking about the ACA, so there's still a lot of opportunity for that this year.
Right. The Medicare definitely is seen as separate from the ACA and an area where bipartisan support can come together, even though oftentimes folks lump together all of healthcare issues with being attached to the ACA at this point. We are excited to look forward to a Medicare package that we can get behind and work with our Medicare working group and our Medicare FMO Principals Council on.
It is amazing to watch two U.S. senators of different parties who can be at each other's throats on anything related to the ACA and then marching hand in hand together on any program that once you're over the age of 65 that you're eligible for. So from Medicare Advantage to A through D, it's been a much more of a bipartisan process.
We are hearing promising news that Congress and the administration may have an increased interest in passing market stability legislation. What is the current status of the Alexander Murray bill and others like Collins Nelson and the bipartisan problem solvers?
So I think there are a lot of interesting pieces going on along here. And I had a nice conversation with Senator Murray this week about the Alexander Murray bill, which provides for cost sharing reductions and waivers for 1332 programs. So let me tell you a little bit about our conversation, myself and the ranking member, Senator Murray. She talked about the Alexander Murray bill being a good bill, but being designed for a system that was pre the elimination of the individual mandate. And so the way that Alexander Murray was designed was to provide for cost sharing reductions and for more state flexibility through an easier to obtain 1332 waiver. But that was designed for something pre the individual mandate repeal, which admittedly doesn't come into place till 2019. But by the time we got Alexander Murray into place, we were really talking about a time period like that. And it's also pre the cost sharing reduction payments being pulled. So now we're in a world where a couple of things are going on. One, there are certain people who've actually done better with the cost sharing reductions being gone.
The consumers doing better.
Consumers doing better with the cost sharing reductions being gone. So if you made less than 400% of poverty, and you might be getting now a bronze plan for free while before you were having to pay for that. And there's a sort of perverse incentive that as we took the cost sharing reductions away, we've actually increased the cost of these products to the point where people were beginning to get enough tax credits that actually got them payments for the entire maybe bronze plan. And the cost sharing reductions, since it's legally required that the carriers provide those, even if they're not getting for them, you're paying down the deductible and other costs that the cost sharing reduction did. Some people actually did better under the system that's the way now. Now, the people who actually did worse with the cost share reductions are not actually the people who were technically receiving the cost share reduction. It's people over the 400% of poverty. So while you might have not been eligible for any sort of cost share reduction to your program, because the rates for the whole system have moved up so much more rapid, those are the people who are really who have suffered even more. People who aren't eligible for any tax credits have really the cost share reductions, I think, were more damaging too. So one of the things that they need to be careful of, I think, is they don't want to do anything to harm people who are now getting a plan that because of the cost share reduction not being there, that they're now eligible for. So I think we want to, one, protect a lot of those people. So we have to might be looking at some of the tax credits in part of the system there. Two, I think there's going to be a continual conversation around the 1332 waivers, how those are really set up. And then three, let's take the Collins-Nelson bill, which is a reinsurance bill that Senator Collins of Maine feels that she got a pledge for by voting for the tax bill. How do those reinsurance programs really work? If you have all 50 states get them, that sounds great on one level, but will the states actually apply for the reinsurance? How do you actually make sure that they're out there applying for the funds and using them? What do those reinsurance funds, how are they actually used? Are we talking about more of a hybrid high-risk pool or an invisible risk pool? Or are we really talking about taking high-risk people completely out of the pool, moving them to a separate pool, charging them more, but giving them a little of assistance through reinsurance to pay those premiums? I think those are the sorts of disputes that will go on while trying to discuss market stabilities. And really, you kind of have to start the conversation for market stability in the place the market is today and not the place the market was a year ago.
Right. I don't think that we're going to see Alexander Murray move forward as we saw it written in September, I believe, of 2017. I completely agree with that. I do think that with this past funding vote that we saw, even though there was obviously a lot of pressure to get this passed to continue to fund the government till February 8th, even just for a 3-week funding, we did see some bipartisanship there, which is a good olive branch to see as we're moving forward and trying to get some momentum behind Alexander Murray and Collins Nelson. But looking at this from a state point of view, which often is the hat that I wear here, looking at the timing when we're talking about 1332 waivers and reinsurance is really crucial. So Chris went through a lot of how they are going to be trying to put these pieces together and get them passed on a federal level. But then when it gets to states taking them up, like he mentioned, it can take a lot of time to be able to do so. Recently, I was talking with some folks about 1332 waivers, and they were given estimate of 18 months as a timeline to be able to completely develop it and get them even approved by HHS. I think that's a very long timeline. I don't think that that is a completely accurate assumption of how long it could take. I think these can be done in a shorter time frame, and they have been done in a shorter time frame over the past year or so. So, but the fact is that even if we do get some of these passed and there's an easier way to get a 1332 waiver passed, or Collins Nelson is able to put into place the availability for these reinsurance funds for states to use, they still have to put up the mechanisms to be able to utilize them in their states. And so we're looking out, I think, beyond 2019 and possibly 2020 before some of these pieces could actually come into play into the states. So not to be a downer, we do want to see these market stabilization efforts put into place. But my point is, the sooner the better for states to be able to come together and embrace them and be able to have the complexities and the framework in place to be able to actually benefit from these designs going forward.
Yeah, I think we're soon going to see some estimates from certain states of what they expect next year's individual, small, and large group rates to sort of be going up at, done by Avalere, other outside entities of what we expect next year's to look like. And I think part of what they're going to need to look at is factoring back in that removal of the individual mandate. And not only the effect that the removal of the individual mandate has on the individual market, but for that matter, the employer market. Because if an individual is not mandated to have health insurance, many might have signed up with their employer because part of the individual mandate. And so you might have people who now choose not to sign up with their employer without an individual mandate there. So you have potential for rate increases without the individual mandate on both the individual market side, but also the small group, large group, and self-insurance, because now we're looking at this very differently. So while the ACA has often had a bigger effect on the individual market, I think this is one of the pieces that can have an effect on the group market more than we've seen before. And so we're hopeful that some of the market stability ideas that Alexander and Murray are working on can really help that. I am very hopeful because I think Senator Alexander and Senator Murray are shining examples of bipartisanship. They both have very strong ideological differences. One is a very true conservative, the other much more progressive. But I think you can still try to find places in that Venn diagram of where just understanding the insurance market that they both do, where they know they think things can work, even if they're approaching at it from different points of view.
And I want to go back and revisit just something that you pointed out about the individual mandate penalties being removed for 2019 and going forward and their effect on the employer market. This is something that will not just affect them because individuals may decide not to take up their employer-sponsored coverage because they no longer face an individual penalty if they don't take it up, but also specifically with large employers, possibly not being able to meet their participation requirements and the effect that will have with them working with carriers to have coverage for the other employees that they have, that they are offering employer-sponsored coverage for. So there's a lot of concern there, not just of possibly small groups deciding just not even to offer it anymore if a lot of the individuals that they were covering are deciding that they want to go without coverage. And of course, a small employer would be able to do so without facing the penalties. But for large employers that may have an exodus from their market as well, facing these harsh realities of trying to find a carrier that will work with them if they aren't having the numbers required for participation requirements.
Yeah, I think those participation requirements are something that we hear when we're working and doing meetings with a lot of our coalition partners. We're in a new partnership for employer health, and there's a lot of different groups in there, from florists to retailers and others, where they have a lot of difficulty meeting those participation requirements. If you're a restaurant, you have a lot of part-time employees. Maybe they're only doing 35 hours a week. It's really hard to get to that participation requirement. And we've kind of taken away one of the legs of the stool to actually getting to those participation requirements. And so you might have difficulty for a lot of these more flexible work issues from staffing associations and others to really get those participation requirements. And we're hearing that because we work so closely with employers.
We are just 4 weeks away from NAHU's Capital Conference, where hundreds of NAHU members will join us to lobby for permanent repeals of the Cadillac tax and HIT. What would you tell members who are on the fence about joining us this year?
Well, I want to make sure that as much as we are celebrating this legislative victory for getting the Cadillac tax delayed to 2022, a moratorium on the HIT tax for 2019, and also a 6-year extension for CHIP funding and a 2-year delay of the medical device tax, that we still have a lot to do. Those are wonderful victories for us, but we are still continuing to work for a full repeal of the Cadillac tax, a full repeal of the HIT tax, and not to mention support of much of the market stability legislation that we just discussed with Alexander Murray and then the Collins-Nelson bill. So we still have a lot of work to do. We're also celebrating our 2-year delay for the Cadillac tax to 2022. Of course, the Cadillac tax is that 40% excise tax. So we're celebrating that with $40 off of your Capital Conference registration through this week. So through Friday, January 26th, the bill was signed on Monday. So we were putting that special together for this week. And we'd love for you to take advantage of that and come and join us. We have other issues that we're working on as well regarding employer reporting, the medical loss ratio, ways that we're attacking that, which we mentioned in last week's podcast, so I won't go too much into that. But our plate is definitely still full on activities for us and areas for advocacy for when you all are here in February. We also have even a better idea of what we'll be facing after we see Congress come back and face the continuing resolution that ends February 8th. We could see some more health issues go into that package and possibly the omnibus bill that we mentioned earlier in the conversation. So we don't want to at all paint the picture that with these tax delays that our job is over. It's never over. We have plenty to do and your voices matter. They have been very instrumental so far, even in 2018, already sending over 15,000 Operation Shout messages on a number of different things. So we value your participation and we want your voice heard here with us on the Hill.
Yeah, so I think I spoke to some members of ours who were a little disappointed when repeal and replace didn't happen. And they're sort of like, so what's actually happening in Washington? Nothing's actually getting done there. What's the point of participating? And I think what this last week demonstrated is there's still quite a bit going on in healthcare. And I think there's quite a bit to be done. And so the fact that CHIP was extended, the HIT Cadillac tax was delayed, the HIT tax was delayed for 2019, shows you that there's really a lot going on underneath the surface there. And I think there's a lot of potential for market stability issues, tons of Medicare issues. I know our members working on everything from 3-day observation status to how benefits people being eligible for COBRA, for Medicare through COBRA and others. There's so much going on out there that's still happening. And so I think even without the very media heavy repeal and replace and slogans and political finger pointing, it's actually an opportunity to get more done as we get less media attention, But getting things done for real people like the Cadillac tax, that's going to really affect consumers, or that cost of the HIT tax. So there's a lot that can happen in this next year. And I think having people from all 50 states talk to 100 senators out there can have a real impact on letting people really know what's going on with employers, individuals, and seniors on Medicare Advantage out there, because we are seeing progress this year. And I actually think this year we could see quite a bit more being done out there. So this is not the year to take off, even if we felt the repeal and replace in the first year was going to be the hotter action.
Yeah, don't miss out. You've gotten a personal invitation from Chris and myself. We want you here. We want your voice heard. And we look forward to seeing you later in February at Capital Conference.
That's all the time we have for this week's episode. Our thanks to Marcy Buckner and Chris Hartman for joining us for the Washington Update podcast from the National Association of Health Underwriters. Thank you for listening.